This is KYUK Public Radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Christy Schallenberger. Alaska State Troopers released the names of the four passengers who died in a plane crash near the village of Tumtutuliak on February 6. With the exception of the pilot, all lived in Kipnuk. The Kipnuk residents are Charlie Carl, 66, Carrie Gurley Peter, 45, and our son, Quentin Muggy Peter, 18. Donna Misek, 42, was also from Kipnuk, but her last known address was in Anchorage, according to Trooper spokesperson Megan Peters. A family friend confirmed she lived in Kipnuk. The pilot was 34-year-old Tony Matthews. The plane, operated by Ute Commuter Service, was found crashed 11 miles southwest of Tumtutuliak as it headed to the coastal community of Kipnuk from Bethel. No one survived. An Alaska Army National Guard helicopter dispatched from Bethel to the crash site carrying multiple guardsmen, an Alaska State Trooper, and two medics with LifeMed, according to Alaska National Guard Public Affairs Director Lieutenant Colonel Candace Olmsted. Searchers from Tumtutuliak also helped in aiding the recovery efforts. And a crew of local residents from villages in the Middle Kuskokwim River area are steadily plowing the frozen river to Sleepmute to create a road. Mark Leary, who works for the village of Napaimute, is leading the effort. He says huge boulders of ice filled the river, making it impassable for snow machine and vehicle traffic. But the unpredictable nature of airplane travel prompted Leary and others to bulldoze and then plow the river to Sleepmute, so residents don't have to rely on airplanes if they have a medical emergency or need to pick up supplies in a store. If all goes well, Leary and the crew hope to make it up to Sleepmute by Saturday. And yesterday, in the first of a two-part series, we explored the effects of warming river water on salmon. Today, we look at the warming ocean and what that means to the Yukon River King Run. Johanna Urick reports that scientists are using travel data gathered in the Bering Sea to understand why some fish are returning early and what is changing in their ocean habitat.
Managers have noticed that in recent years, smaller, younger king salmon are returning to salmon streams. Since these changes are occurring statewide and the fish spend most of their lives in the ocean, researchers think this trend has something to do with changes in the marine environment. In the Bering Sea, that includes such factors as the loss of the coal pool of ocean water that once was thought to have helped nurture cod, the loss of sea ice, major changes in where fish species are located, their habitat.
That's the same habitat that these Chinook salmon are in during their entire marine life.
Catherine Howard is a state fish biologist doing high sea salmon research. She studies juvenile salmon caught in the fall ocean trawl surveys operated by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in the Bering Sea.
And the Chinook that are caught are primarily two-year-old fish, so we're really monitoring a cohort of fish.
Using genetic information from the catch, Howard was able to figure out how many of the fish were Yukon River Chinooks, otherwise known as king salmon. Her team found a direct relationship between the number of juveniles and the number of kings returning to the Yukon 3 years later. That means the trawl data can be used to project into the future.
Typically with salmon forecasts, you're only looking at the next season. But we're looking 3 years out because we're looking at juveniles, and these fish are staying in the ocean for an additional 3 years.
In warmer oceans, biologists are seeing faster growth, and they're seeing smaller, younger fish returning earlier. She wondered if she would find the same trend of increasing growth in the juvenile kings in her trawl survey.
Sure enough, we see the exact same thing.
Howard says the trawl data also reveals changes in the diets of the kings. The changes are so fundamental that right now there are more questions than answers.
And we don't know what that's going to mean in terms of survival and productivity of these stocks until those fish return to the river.
What she does know is not good news for the Yukon. Based on her data, she expects some small runs ahead, especially in 2022. Howard expects runs similar to those in 2012 and 2013.
These weren't good years. These were years where even if no fish were harvested in the river, we still would have struggled to make escapement objectives.
The only good change she sees is the people fishing on the Yukon. Catherine Howard told a room full of scientists that the attitudes of the people along the river have changed. In the past, she says people were trying to get more fish for themselves. Now she observes that the conversation has turned to conserving and protecting the Yukon King Run. For KYUK, I'm Johanna Urich.
And Alaska Native women are murdered or go missing at rates that are far too high. Their families and communities have felt the crisis for a long time, but until two researchers in Seattle issued a report on it in 2018, it didn't have a name. They dubbed it Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. Senator Lisa Murkowski says the report has focused national attention on the horrifying reality that Native women are murdered at a rate 10 times the national average.
And being able to put numbers to what we knew from the stories, to be able to identify.
Murkowski spoke yesterday at a briefing on the issue, now often known by its acronym, MMIW. Native leaders and justice advocates packed a Senate hearing room for an update on what Congress and the Trump administration are doing to address the problem. Murkowski is sponsoring Savannah's Act, which aims to improve data collection, and co-sponsoring the Not Invisible Act to target the trafficking of Native people. And, Murkowski said, last year for the first time, Congress appropriated funds for MMIW.
$6.5 million dedicated solely and specifically to dealing with the issue of murdered and missing Indigenous women, to provide for tracking and for data, for forensic equipment.
President Trump signed an executive order last year establishing a multi-agency task force. Assistant Interior Secretary for Indian Affairs, Tara Sweeney, says one of the goals is to help the families of the victims.
What we've heard time and time again through these Reclaiming Our Native Community roundtables has been we report it and then we don't hear anything. We can't find out the status of this case. We don't know who to talk to.
Trump's 2021 budget requests $3 million for Operation Lady Justice Task Force on Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. And finally, at the 2020 Hardwood Basketball Tournament in Anchorage on Thursday, three girls' varsity teams from the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta got some victories and some losses. Anchorage Grace Christian beat the Akiak Thunderbirds 62-21, and the Homer Mariners beat the Antioch Halfbreeds 69-44. And the Bethel Lady Warriors beat Akiachuk 54-46. This is KYUK News. Thanks for listening. I'm Christy Schallenberger. Send your tips and comments to news@kyuk.org, and stay tuned for News Yukton coming up.